Welcome to the NARPM Podcast, where we bring you the most in-depth look into the property management industry. We discuss hot topics with property managers, vendors, and those that support the property management industry. The National Association of Residential Property Managers is the recognized leader in property management. Our host is Pete Neubig, co-founder of Empire Industries Property Management and co-founder and CEO of VPM Solutions, where property management meets global talent. The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are that of the host and are not necessarily those of NARPM. Now, here's your host, Pete Neubig.
Welcome to the NARPM Podcast. Thanks for joining us today. However you may be listening, iTunes, iHeartRadio, YouTube, or any of the podcast platforms, thanks for being here. We've got a great show today. We're in the presence of greatness. We have past former NARPM National President, Mark Creditor, who's the former owner and broker of Get There First Realty in Dallas. They were managing about 1,700 properties when they sold in 2014. To a publicly traded company called Realogy. Mark's going to be speaking at NARPM Broker Owner, and if you have never had the pleasure of hearing him speak, you're in for a treat. He's incredibly knowledgeable and incredibly entertaining. So I think you really enjoy the conversation that Mark and I have. And within our conversation, Mark talked a little bit about online reviews, and it made me think of a hot topic. So I'm going to talk about Yelp here for a minute. You know, we're almost like slave to our residents with reviews, right? If a resident gives us a bad review, then our Google rating or our Yelp rating goes down. And then we believe that if we have negative ratings, then people won't rent from us, or more importantly, investor clients or owner clients won't do business with us. Even though when we get a negative review, it's probably because we're doing our job, right? But we're so worried about that we'll bend and break sometimes for residents to kind of remove that negative review. Well, I made the mistake of creating a Yelp page when I had my management company. And if you do not have a Yelp page, you're not missing anything. Do not get a Yelp page, because you can never get rid of your Yelp page, I found out. You know, Yelp was giving us a terrible rating. And when I dove into it, I looked and I'm like, well, I don't have as many Yelp ratings as I do Google ratings, but I don't have all negative Yelp ratings. But when I looked, my Yelp rating was like a 1, but I had all these 4 and 5 star reviews on Yelp, but Yelp was hiding them. They were suppressing them, and they weren't even adding them to the total amount. Like, so it wasn't even part of the calculation on my stars. So as I'm looking at this, I'm like, man, these guys are literally just giving us the negative ones. So unlike Google, where I can, you know, review, flag, and dispute reviews, and Google will most of the time, you know, literally, you know, get rid of bad reviews if you go through their process, but Yelp wouldn't do it. So what I did is I created a company-wide contest, and I'm like, okay, well, I can't beat them. I can't get rid of them. So I'm going to have to, like, beat them with like a bunch of good reviews. So what I did is I had a company-wide contest for a full month. Everybody in the company, so I think like 35 people at the time, and I paid $1,000 for the person with the most reviews with a minimum of 25 reviews. And so we just blasted Yelp reviews for a full month. Somebody did hit 25. Believe it or not, Yelp still suppressed most of those reviews, which just got me just even crazier. But at least I got my Yelp scoring to something that was pretty decent. But I would not go back and ask residents to remove their 1-star review. And I would not change if somebody didn't pay and I filed an eviction and they gave me a 1-star review. I'm just going to deal with it. And so we started using that as a marketing ploy. So, or a sales tactic, right? So if somebody said, what about your reviews? We're like, oh, you mean these negative reviews from residents that were doing our job? The challenge, of course, is if people are not making that phone call and they're looking at your reviews and they don't make that call or they don't cost it a reviews, you can't combat that in the sales process. So that's the big challenge that we have. But if, again, I'm going to tell you this, here's my public, you know, my public service announcement. If you do not have a Yelp page. Do not go get a Yelp page. You don't need a Yelp page. We'll be right back after these commercials, and then we get a great talk and learnings from one of the best in the business, Mark Creditor. Tired of wasting hours stuck in traffic running between your properties? Well, do we have the solution for you? ShowDigs is more than just a full-service leasing automation software. They employ over 2,000 licensed real estate agents specifically trained to show your properties on demand. Here's how it works. You list your properties through ShowDigs, and when a lead inquires to tour, ShowDigs' automation allows them to self-schedule a time that works for them. A local ShowDigs agent will accept the tour request through the ShowDigs app, and once they've shown the property, you'll receive a detailed tour report straight into your inbox. Want to learn how ShowDigs can save you time and money without compromising your conversion rates? Head over to showdigs.com/narpum to learn more about the only leasing software that can handle all of your field work. Fill out the form, and when you sign up for ShowDigs, you'll get to activate your first 5 properties for free. Once again, showdigs.com/narpum.
Did you know that most tenants struggle to come up with a large sum of money needed to move into their new rental home? Let Renters Insurance Solutions help you solve this problem by giving tenants another option for security deposits. Property managers can make up to $200 per door annually with our programs. Learn more at our website, yourris.com. That's yourris.com. Renters Insurance Solutions, your experts in property management and insurance.
Welcome back, everybody. And as promised, I have National Past President Mark Creditor out of Dallas here. Mark, thank you so much for being here, buddy.
My pleasure. Good to be here.
Now, in the intro, I told everybody that you'd sold your business in 2014, but I'm a little bit of a fanboy, Mark, so I got to tell a quick story, and then I want to ask you what the differences are between 14 and 24. But you were one of the first people I ever saw speak at a NARPM national conference. I don't know if you remember, it's back in San Diego. I think it was 2015 or 2014. Yep. And I thought you were like a superstar. And I was like so nervous to even approach you. I did a year later, and you were the most kindest, gentlest person. And you spoke to me and gave me all sorts of great insight as I was super, super new to NARPM and to the real estate and to property management. So always, and I still think today you're one of the better speakers. So I'm excited to see you at Broker Owner when you speak there next. But thank you so much for being on the show today. So Mark, tell me, you sold your business in 2014. We're talking in 2024. Tell me some of the differences that you've run into. I know we were talking in the green room earlier, and I'm like, oh, we got to record. So let's talk about some of the stuff that you're seeing then and that you're seeing now.
Thank you so much. So I operated for 30 years in a room that had a front door and a back door. And we welcomed our tenants in the front door. And if they wanted to stay and pay and behave themselves, we kept them in the room. And if not, then there was a process by which owners hired us, because they didn't want to do it, to have them leave. And this was really why I was hired. I was hired because people were not always compliant with what was written in the lease. What changed mostly in the last 10 years is we still want to have that operation, but all the windows of this room are wide open for the whole world to look in and judge us. And that's the scariest environment the property manager today could have ever been placed in. Because of this environment, they need organizations like NARPM and experts like you and this show more than ever before. I mean, we really have a culture that is always going to make the small business owner, who unfortunately is in the business of providing paid for housing for our clients, as a victim, as a source of being the bad guy. And I used to say that being a landlord was like being in a boxing match. You're on one corner and, you know, you have the owner on the other corner and the referee is beating both of you up. That's the tenant. Well, now there's like 12 tenants. You know, when I used to go to California and speak, I'd say that being a property manager in California is like being on a basketball team where you have 2 players and 10 referees and everybody was looking at you. Well, the whole country has become like that. So that's my first observation, is the property managers that I meet today at NARPM conferences are better than I've ever known before, because they have to be. You cannot be a half property manager, because you're going to get destroyed either through social media or through, you know, price competition. But you have to be on your game all the time. This is the NBA of property management, and NARPM is the best training area to keep us good.
Do you, I know that could be a negative, but do you see that as an opportunity? Because, you know, I've always been quoted, well, in Australia, 80% of the properties are third-party managed, 20% are self-managed. And in the United States, it's, you know, 70% are self-managed, 30% are, you know, third-party managed. Do you see, because of the windows and using that analogy, that more investors are going to start looking at professional property managers to manage their units?
The answer is absolutely, but I'll always find a reason why it's the best time ever to hire a property manager. Even if the opposite was true, I would figure out an angle, because we always have to be in demand. You know, we always have to be able to survive no matter where the economy takes us. So there's always a compelling reason to have a professional manager, but certainly this is low-hanging fruit, because most individual owners aren't going to have a chance going to eviction court when even in Dallas County, there is a free lawyer in a booth saying for tenants to bring into the courtroom. I didn't have that 10 years ago. We would have on a monthly basis, we'd have 60 hearings, and we never lost. We were very close friends with the judge. He was a good guy. He was very active in NARPM. It was pretty much whatever the property code said. Now there's a million loopholes, and I think individual owners are out of their minds thinking that they're going to be able to produce better returns than having a professional management company make sure they're in compliance. Compliance has always been the most important aspect of having a property management company. Now, people who are not in compliance have more to lose than ever before, which could be extended non-payment occupancy because they're just playing the system over and over again, whatever it is, Paul Pazafi, David, appeals. Non-compliance, God forbid, with some property code thing, and didn't realize maybe the smoke detector addendum change a locking device, so they call the city and they get you red tag. I mean, there's just so many things that have amplified in the 10 years that I've left. But circle back around to the social media part. I have to tell a story that I still think I would be proud of. When I was at the NARPM conference a few months ago in Atlanta, I sat next to a really nice young couple. They had their own management company, maybe 400 to 600 doors, but they were real players in the business. And I said, what's the biggest challenge you have? He says, well, it really breaks our heart if we get a 4-star review from one of our tenants and not 5. Like, I'll go see the tenant to see why we didn't get the 5th star. And I'm thinking, this is the craziest thing that I ever heard. Because why would anybody give you stars if you're doing something they don't want you to do, like make them pay rent, make right. them pay a chargeback, make right. them pay a homeowners association charge? You know, like, I think about this relationship. It isn't naturally kumbaya. There, you have to pick sides, and our sides are the owners. But they were so worried about their social media rating that I almost felt they were letting their guard down and their fiduciary responsibility to represent the owner. Like, I said, well, what do you do if it's like because they don't want to pay a late charge, so they ding you on a star? He says, well, it's cheaper for us maybe to eat the late fee and maintain 5 stars, because that's the way owners.
Then all
shop
of a sudden, now you're not adhering to fair housing.
Whatever. Yeah, I mean, all of that is right. even deep for me. But I'm just saying that on the surface, their determination of how well they're doing is how well they're being rated by their tenant, when they are going to naturally at times be in an advertorial position to have to do something people don't like them to do. And I never knew from that. I only represented owners, and I almost would say to my owners, please, we have a 0.5-star rating on Yelp, you know, whatever it was. It was maybe 3, and I said I was shooting for 2. I'd say, read what they're writing. They're writing exactly about what you're trying to hire me for. Non-payment of rent, and see what I'm telling you needs to be done, because I've done it, and they write about it. They write it about it on Yelp. I'm proud right. that tenants who don't pay rent leave hating me, because you're going to get a tenant who pays. And I always played that card, being the toughest guy in the room, not afraid to take on non-compliance. I felt that I got money out of people that would never pay anybody else, because they really believed that we knew what we were doing, which of course we did. Everybody does. But just this whole, what happened in 10 years, we've gotten soft. We've gotten soft as a industry. because we're so worried about how we're perceived by social media. And again, I may be way off, but it's just real hard for me to kindly accept, you know, somebody criticizing me that's going to harm me in the future because I'm doing exactly what the next owner wanted me to do because that's why they're hiring me. You have to always figure out how to really position yourself that what I did was right. And I want people to know it was right. And here's why. You may not like it. Tough love, whatever you want to call it. So that's the first thing that I really noticed was everybody was trying to be in good graces with their tenants. And I understand they're my customer. When it came to fixing things, I was very good about it. I was good about everything except when you didn't pay rent. I mean, that was the least I could do for my owners was get them a rent check.
Right.
I fought hard for my tenants about repairs. If my owners were not right, I would fire them or I would tell them, look, you can't not do this. I mean, that was easy. That was just property code. But non-payment of rent, boy, you got to be really aggressive and tenants are not going to like it and they're going to write about you. And I don't know, it just seemed weird the way that everything was rated on ratings.
So you mentioned that, you mentioned compliance. And you also mentioned price squeeze. Talk to me a little bit about what you're seeing there. Is this because the institutionals are coming in and they're kind of charging low rates or are you seeing something else now, Mark?
Wow. Okay. So there's so many things that are moving. You know, I had lunch with a very learned manager in our market, and he said that our industry is going towards a 0% fee for the owner by creating enough additional revenue sources and fees from the tenant. And I kind of absorbed that because, I mean, fees was what we were all about, ancillary fees. And at Broker Owner, I'm speaking about fees. Well, fees are now under attack. They're under attack by Fed, the state, the local. I mean, you really need to get on the bandwagon being ahead of where these fee problems are. And I think it's going to be much more difficult for property managers to just randomly invent fees because everybody's looking at fees as if it's bad. You know, this junk fee concept that we're being put into. So I'm going to move that aside. I used to believe that when you charge a fee for a service, you want to charge for things that owners can't price. You know, it's almost like when I drive a Lexus or I drive a Toyota, it's really the same body style. In fact, we went to Canada to the tour where the RAV4 was made and the NX300 is made. It's the same car. But why am I willing to pay 20% more for the Lexus every day of the week because they'll come and pick my car up for service, because they wash my car, because they give me a free toll tag when I go on the toll road with the loan car. Like there's 9 or 10 things that Lexus gives me as perceived value, so I'm happy to pay more. Well, with property management, we have to be thinking of things that we are providing owners to get premium prices. You cannot survive with price, because people are always going to come out with a lower cost basis for owners or lose money and go out of business. And by doing that, it takes the rest of us down.
Right.
And I mean, we were always the most expensive management company in the market. We never discounted our price for any owner, but we always said, use somebody else first. And if they can't do these 12 things that only we do to be sure that you get paid on the first and all this, look, we're happy to get their second. Our company was called Get Their First. And owners would always call back and say, oh, you probably won't take my business now because I didn't go with you at first. I said, no, of course we want you back. Come on, no problem. I couldn't possibly play that game with fees. There were too many other things. And I'll tell you the most valuable thing you can put a price on, and that's professional certifications from NARPM. I wanted to have more initials next to my name faster than anybody else in the industry, or certainly in my marketplace. So I was always getting certified for something. And our company, we always want to be the first CRMC. You invest in yourself when you invest in NARPM, taking as many classes, getting certified. You could become even licensed in certain things, whether it be to abate taxes. But the more services you can provide under one umbrella, it's much like when you go to a doctor and, you know, they also have another certification. You know, I know some dentists who are also MDs, you know, or not an optometrist, but an ophthalmologist. You know, like, I mean, they're both going to check my eyes using the same arch eye, but I'd rather pay more and get the ophthalmologist because he went to 4 years of medical school or she went to 4 years of medical school. So I'm always thinking about things you can't put a price on when I'm charging fees to my clients. And I really still think that there's room out there for us to have as part of the runway of additional services, because keep discounting these management fees is going to just kill all of us. The institutional question you asked, most of these institutional managers, a lot of them own the portfolios that you really can't compete with because they're kind of working for themselves. But when they charge fees, they're often trying to put you into this square hole, into a round peg, and it doesn't work. And you have to be able to be flexible in order to charge more and outcompete. Like, owners may want you to do certain things in terms of compliance, inspection, and I just think that you have to agree to a lot of stuff and charge more for it instead of nickel and diming and charging for every little thing. I find it incredible how we've peeled away the services, because I have to believe that's harder to keep track of. Whereas, just go inspect the house. We used to have runners, these guys who would just drive all, or girls, drive all over town just to take pictures of things, because it was no problem. We'd have someone in the area tomorrow. We'd have the pictures in 24 hours. We never charged owners for them. We were in the neighborhood anyway. Anyway.
I think you could say the argument against that is just everything's more expensive these days. And so it's hard to be profitable if you're only charging the big three, right? The management fee, the lease fee, and the lease renewal fee. And so there was a, I don't know when, but a few years back, there was a pivot to charging more fees, and obviously more fees to the resident than maybe to the investor or owner side of things.
Yes,
And I know to
I see that.
Even today, I know that most management company owners would have no problem adding a fee to the resident, but man, if they add a fee to that owner client, they are sweating bullets, or they do everything they can before they actually charge that fee, even if it's a very warranted fee to charge.
Well, what
So
if you offered services to that owner that nobody else offers? What if you were able to provide that owner, low interest financing when they can't afford to pay their bill each month? I think some management contracts automatically charge donors 18% if they had a balance, if they didn't pay back the money that was a shortage, let's say you had to replace an air conditioner. I mean, what if I charged them 12% and everybody charges 18%? And the owner would say, well, I like going with them because if I have a problem, it's a lower interest rate. It's kind of like the credit card that charges low interest rate, but you don't get any
Yep.
perks. I'm just thinking of things outside the box, things that are really impactful for owners. Maybe when the owner wants to sell the property, you have a better price if they're a client of yours than what they would pay elsewhere. That would make up years worth of management fees. Maybe you have rent due sooner in the month so they get their check faster. Maybe you process the checks faster. All these things you can't put a price on, but if you add them all up, I'm not
There's
nickel and
value.
diming. I'm really just giving them a compelling reason to pay us a market rate for a market service.
Yeah. And then
The fee.
you can charge a higher management fee, but now it's all encompassing, right? And it adds all these other services or these perceived value as well.
Perceived value that you can't put a price on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
Like those initials after
when I
the
first started my property management firm back in 2012, I was the $50 a month guy.
name.
And it took me about 2 years, and I did a complete overhaul on my marketing, my website, and my image. And to use your analogy of the cars, right? I went from the Toyota to the Lexus, and overnight I became the highest fee in Houston, and we started getting more business rather than, and I was getting better business, right? Because the guys that will come into me for at $50 a month, what they only care about was only price. Every time they did anything was based on price. The guys that came to me when I was most expensive, they cared about the service and the value, and they weren't, always worrying just about price, which means you get better homeowners that will take care of issues when they arise as far as maintenance issues.
Sometimes when you look at the fee for a management company to a client, we're talking about a percent or two, like $20, $40. It's very low money. But yet, if you have much lower prices from your vendors, because they have to sign a contract with you in order to do work for your owners, that they're going to charge your owners less than any other management company pays, that's a perceived value that'll come back to the owner. We used to run a program called the Preferred Marketing Vendor Program, and they would be able to get their checks the same day that they did the work. We'd factor the receivables for the vendor, but the vendor had to agree to charge us less than you charged, than anybody else charged. But they would be happy to because they didn't have a collection problem. They didn't have to wait till Friday or next week or next month. They would gladly charge my clients less money because we paid faster. And we would just tell the owners we did that. And if an owner has repairs, which they're going to have repairs, hopefully they'll see some of that savings when they get the bill for the repair. So little things add up.
I know we hadn't talked about this before, but what's your take on the fixed flat, no, sorry, not fixed, but flat pricing or the three model price, you know, 99, 199, 299 versus the percentage model? Do you have an opinion on which one you like better as a company owner?
I definitely like a percentage model because I'm always going to be improving and raising rents. And I can't ride that curve if I'm in a fixed price model. Fixed price models were not as popular 10 years ago. So again, maybe I don't understand the marketplace, but I do understand inflation. I do understand that when I do a good job for my customer, my tenant, that a modest rental increase to them is not going to be a reason to move. And every time that happens, I'm getting a raise on the management percentage as well. It could be modest, you know, and small, but it's still meaningful and it adds up when you have hundreds or thousands of doors. So that's why the fixed price never made sense for me, because I was always trying to raise my portfolio value by raising the rents. And rents really have gone up a lot.
Since 2020, for sure.
Now, we used to charge a fixed rate for renewal, and I always regretted that. And I always said if I had to redo the business model again, I would have charged a small percentage to do the renewal because, again, the rents went up, but the renewal rate was always the same. It was flat, fixed rate, and that was stupid.
Yeah, we used to charge a percentage for management fees and then a percentage for lease renewal. And then we took all the late fees. And those are the three things that my salespeople would be able to negotiate. They could bring you down a point, or they can bring you down a percentage for the lease renewals.
Yeah.
And the reason why...
We feel very strongly about making our owners partners in late fees. And I would never keep all the late fees because late fees were a huge part of why owners gave us some slack. Because if they weren't paid and I was getting the late fee, then they would like to just file and throw them out because it's no benefit to me. You're keeping all the late fees. If they're my partner in the late fees, then they're going to run them some fishing line and let the tenant maybe have until the court date, be a little bit more tolerant because they're getting a couple of $100 more. Well, now we're limited to 12%. The law's changed in the last 10 years. So whatever, they're getting a percentage of that 12% whenever the tenant does cure. And most of the tenants would cure. I mean, at least 80% would cure on a monthly basis, maybe 90%. So it was all about finding that perfect adjustment of partnership with the owner. And in my case, it was sharing some of those late fees. And obviously being able to collect the money from the tenants so that you both were compensated for your delinquency. And that's important, which it's all changing now because tenants are getting so much lead line. It could take them months to pay and then they leave anyway. I mean, this whole model is so much moved since COVID over to the tenant side.
Even in landlord-friendly states like Texas, it's moving on.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I have really become a true believer in is that many of the things that are implemented thinking they are helping tenants are actually harming the poor and the most vulnerable who need housing. Because I would take much less risk on tenants if it was much more difficult to get rid of them. Just think about that. I mean, it's just, why would I take someone with
any risk,
a credit blemish, if now the government is saying you need to give them a 30-day notice and they can file an appeal and get a free lawyer? I mean, no, if I could take a chance on someone, I'm going to take a chance on them if I could cure it, if it doesn't work out faster. Same thing with getting multiple months of security deposit. It's the best thing in the world for a tenant. But every time they institute a law because they think that's not fair, it's not fair. You're going to make us not want to rent to people that are high risk because we cannot rent to them. I mean, it's not like they have to be rented to.
Right.
You know, I just see this whole model has moved so fast over to the tenant side that I think it's a little bit out of balance. And I think it's going to cause more and more. I've seen it already. More and more governments to force builders to build low-income housing. You know, we see it in Dallas. Yeah.
The people who are making these decisions don't understand the full picture or the macroeconomics of it, right? They think, oh, they're very transactional, right? They're not strategic in their thinking. Like, I'm gonna say this because that's gonna help me get elected, right? And most of the people in my jurisdiction are the renters. And so we're going to go ahead and basically say, you know, we can't charge double deposit, triple deposit, whatever it is, not realizing that those people are never going to get a house now in a decent neighborhood. They're only going to get the lower income stuff.
Yeah, it happened with Section 8. You know, Section 8 became difficult to raise rents and the government was determining what the market was. So then a lot of people just said, man, it's not worth the trouble.
Right. That's kind of sad. Right. And then they try to say, well, you can't say no Section 8, right? So then they say that's disparate. That you're disparately impacting.
Disparate impact.
Disparate impact.
I mean, I can go on all day about disparate impact, but I'm going to save that for broker owner because I got a lot to say about that.
I like it. All right. Well, I'm going to shift gears here. One of the things that you and I discussed in the green room was you can't sell like you buy. So understanding generational marketing. And so tell me a little bit of what you mean by that.
Well, thank you so much. Nothing I enjoy talking more about than the challenges we have as an industry that has longevity, whereas you'll have clients who are in their 20s and you'll have clients that are in their 80s. And I learned a lot of this after I retired. I've always been involved with philanthropy and I love marketing to get people to give money. And it's the same thing with trying to get new business. How you communicate to an 80-year-old is different than how you communicate to a 20-year-old. And in my world, I'm 65, I like to hold paper. I like to hold things. I like to pass it on to my wife. I like to show it to a friend who has a similar problem, three-dimensional. And I love to tell you that maybe I'm not saving trees, but I am definitely getting business for whoever is taking the time to send me a package that I can hold and mail. Now, if I'm 20, I'd be offended if someone took the time to mail it because I don't check my mail but once a month. And I really only like things electronic because that's how I forward it to my friends. But nobody's going to convince me that email is an effective tool unless people open the email. You know, what do they call that? A read rate or something? I mean, and it's very low in fundraising. I know this for a fact. You know, we talk about this with our churches and our synagogues who are trying to communicate events. Everybody went soft to email during COVID or whatever. So now everything is sent by email. But I don't know. I feel like I used to know more about what was going on with organizations when I had a monthly newsletter that I would put down in front of me. So my point is to property managers, you are hiring a lot of people that have no idea how an 80-year-old wants to be communicated, that you should give people options. Maybe they don't want to be emailed all of their statements and all their stuff, especially their tax statements. You know, even with Fidelity, you get a box to check if you want to get certain things by email or by mail. They're smart enough to give people options. Why? Because most of the people with the most money in this country at Vanguard are probably 80, not 20. So they give people the option of getting their statements mailed to them. But property managers who are younger or want to save trees, they don't give options. And I used to, you know, fight this when I was in business because I had a lot of older clients and many of the younger employees would just tell them to check their owner portal. And they didn't know what they were talking about. They didn't have a smartphone or computer. They went to the mailbox. That's how they got statements for everything. That's how they kept track of things. And I feel you have to sell the way the client wants to buy. And many times there's just hard and fast rules with how people can receive things. Now, I'm not talking about tenants and payment of rent. I understand why that should be electronic and ACH. That's not what I'm trying to change. I care much more about expanding my business. And if most of the wealth is in the hands of people like myself, baby boomers, or even older people, traditionalists born before 1946, I want to know how they want to be marketed. I want to know how they want to be communicated with. I want to know how they buy. And I feel we miss that because every booth is all about offshore property management services and maintenance. Everything is done to depersonalize what was always a very much person-to-person relationship. And when we sold our business, as most companies, when they sell, what changed the most that caused less than stellar, you know, success was when the buyer took the personal part out of it. And most do. Most try to mechanize this portfolio of a management company. And I don't think we should get away from that. I think talking to owners and having people answer the phone is really important. I called a property manager from Northam yesterday, coordinating my upcoming delivery at Broker Owner. And I remember it was a third party answering service. And I'm saying to myself, you know, I'm just going to hang up. I'm never going to get through to anybody. Everything is probably someone overseas. Well, would you know it? This answering service put me on hold and found the property manager and connected the two calls. So I'm not saying it doesn't work. It worked great. Like I got my call through, but my initial thought was, I wish somebody would just answer the phone. You know, like I don't like pushing. Everybody does it. I know,
I'm chuckling because you're talking to an ex property manager who became a tech company, right? So I'm kind of chuckling, but. My feeling is if you can use remote team and lower your costs, you have more people to do the task and answer the phones. So yeah. I'm with you on answering the phones. When I had Empire, we had, I think it was one of them phone trees that was like four menus deep. No, right? I mean, if you don't want anybody to answer the phone or you don't want anybody to call on you, just create a phone tree with four levels deep. By the time they finally get some of that, by the time they get to the third level, they're like, screw this, and they just hang up, right? So I'm like, great, I had no calls coming in. But of course, I got the no one ever answers the phone, I can't get anybody, yada, yada, yada.
Right, right. So we definitely saw that happen to our business model. But talking about phone trees, I think there should be a hard and fast rule that there shouldn't be more than four options, and each option
and
should
and
have
one level.
Everybody, and once they push the option, then it should go to real people. Like, yeah. Number one for me was if you're looking for a place to live, push one. Number two was if you're an existing resident and have a maintenance concern. Number three is if you wanted to talk about new business. And, you know, number four was if you wanted to maybe speak to the broker. You know, I mean, if you think about it, there's only really three things: new business, fixing things, and finding a place to live. And each one of those trees should go to some human person who's covering the second part of it. And that's better than four deep and four other deep. Anyway, so this whole impersonalization of our business models concerns me because I really want to sometimes think if I got back on the ring, in the ring to build a business again, I might have a better chance because nobody still does what worked for me then. I think teaching classes at a community college to investors is the greatest way for you to show off your skill set in front of people live. I used to give these landlord classes at SMU. They had an evening program, Southern Methodist University. And it's in a very nice neighborhood. So most of the people who came to the classes had nice properties. They lived in these
affluent neighborhoods.
Cities. Mm-hmm. And it's like teaching in River Oaks in Houston. And the people you would meet were such weenies. And I would show them these videos and these pictures of what tenants did to my properties or did to my clients' properties. I'd show them stories about owners getting shot when they went by to talk to a tenant. Like my job was to scare them to death. And then I'd go through the property code and the new locking device status and the new smoke detector status, depending on which county you're in. And I'd confuse them to death. And by the third week, they were running in with keys. Everybody wanted to talk to me about managing their property. It was the easiest way to build a business. And it was personal. They knew my face. They knew my voice. And they really realized all the stuff you can't say by email or even in the mail that's done better in person. And that's one of the pitfalls to self-management.
I think that's that right there, that story right there is worth the price of admission. If you're listening to this and you're not doing some kind of teaching at a local investor group or a local community college or wherever, that you're missing out on a potential huge opportunity. Because when you teach, obviously you're in front of the room, so you become the authority figure, but you're also building that trust. And so no, they're not going to go shop around for another property manager. They're not going to do it themselves if you scare the bejesus out of them like Mark did as well.
You control the narrative. That's the key.
That's right. All right, Mark. Well, we're up against it. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then I'm going to get you with the lightning round. Are you ready for the lightning round?
Yes.
All right. We'll be right back, everybody.
Have you ever considered hiring a property management virtual assistant but didn't know where to start? Or have you tried hiring a virtual assistant but you weren't satisfied with the number of qualified applicants? If so, VPM Solutions is here to help. VPM is the world's first virtual talent marketplace dedicated specifically to property management and real estate. We have thousands of talented virtual assistants ready to work for you, including assistants for accounting, leasing, maintenance coordination, rent collections, and much more. With VPM, you can post jobs, screen candidates, hire, and pay your virtual assistants, all from within our state-of-the-art platform. VPM is the easy button for hiring and managing your virtual team. And the best part? VPM Solutions is 100% free to employers. That's right, free. No placement fees, no employer markups, and no hidden charges. With VPM, property managers get the talent they need while reducing costs and improving customer service. Visit vpmsolutions.com and create your free account today.
PestShare, a pest control amenity for your resident benefits program, starting at just $5 per door. You can give your residents the pest control coverage they need. PestShare will even pay for the expensive infestations like bed bugs and cockroaches. And the debate over who pays for pest control, while PestShare turns an expense into added revenue. For more information, check out their website at PestShare.com/property managers.
Create the best move-in experience for your resident or homeowner. Citizen Home Solutions is a utility concierge service designed to assist with services needing activation prior to moving into a new home. Our experienced team will help eliminate the stress of setting up services. No more calling a long list of service providers to get everything connected and ready for move-in day. Your client will value the white glove service provided on your behalf. True, Citizen Home Solutions assist with utilities, but more importantly, we create an experience that your client will appreciate and love. Our service is free and offers you a revenue share program. Want to know more? Visit pmcpartner.com.
All right, welcome back. Mark Kreder, get ready in the hot seat, the lightning round. All right, what is one of the stupidest things you've done when you started your business?
Stupidest thing I did when I started my business was probably not investing enough money in signage. I think how you look and how you look in front of the property and the street is very important. And that is kind of like the display case of your retail store. So I would have made better use of signage and graphics.
All right. What PM software did you use?
I used ACT to keep track of my tenants, an Excel spreadsheet to keep track of the money up until 1,200 doors. We had an Excel spreadsheet.
Holy
and I wrote
crud.
Letters with Word and wrote checks with Quicken. When we got to 1,200 or so doors, we went to AppFolio for 1 year. And then we moved to PropertyWare because it had more flexible fields at the time. And then I sold the business with about 1,650 doors. And I never ran the business better than I did when I had ACT, Quicken, and Excel.
I remember ACT. I'm old enough to remember ACT. That's funny, man. Did you use virtual assistants back then? I'm assuming not, because they didn't come into in vogue until after 2014.
Yeah, the only thing we had was a really elaborate voicemail system, you know, where people would be able to get their calls forwarded to their mobile phones. Mm-hmm. I always wanted my managers to always be available.
What is one piece of advice you would give someone just starting out in the PM business?
Try to use money to make money. That, you know, it's very hard if you are not able to, you know, invest in things that are just easy ways to make money. You know, I'm a big believer in financing trucks and beepers and whatever people need. Beepers, listen to me, you know, trucks and software and stuff for your vendors. Your vendors need to grow with your business.
Half the audience just said a beeper. What's that?
Yeah, I meant the cell phone.
I'm teasing.
Yeah, I think you need to start the business with some money. You can't start with zero.
Does pineapple belong on pizza?
Absolutely not.
Are you from New York originally, Mark? I can't remember.
Hicksville.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no real New Yorker would say that pineapple belongs on pizza.
That's a good question.
What was your first job?
Oh, my first job was probably piano playing when I was 14. But then I got a job at a I did a lot of things. I mowed lawns, but I got a job at a sneaker store and I started to work there. And then I would go to the flea market on Sundays with the sneakers and I made a lot of money. By the time I graduated high school, I had $4,000, went to college, and I moved from sneakers to backgammon sets and sold backgammon sets at all the college bookstores from New York to Texas and head of a company.
You've been in Texas how long, and you still call them sneakers? I love you, man. Yeah. I still call them sneakers, too, man. They're not. What do they call them? They call them tennies down here in Houston.
Running shoes.
Tennies or running shoes, yep. What is one thing that most people don't know about you?
Well, I can tap dance.
Really? Okay. I learned something new about you. I thought you were going to write that you write parodies of property management songs.
Most people know that. Yeah, I'm big on writing songs. I teach music every week. I do a lot with music. I love music and 20th century songwriters and musicals. Like, that's my thing.
You heard it here first, folks. If you go see Mark at Broker Owner, he's speaking, he's going to tap dance and do a musical number for you. So there you go.
Yeah, my opening song is about junk fees.
What's a book you're either currently reading or one that's impacted your business or life?
Die with Zero. Written by a Houston money manager, poker player, and it just says that all the money that you're accumulating, and I love talking about accumulating wealth and reinvesting money. I mean, I did that at the convention keynote, but I really think that you have to use money to enjoy memories with your family so that when you die, you don't say, God, I wish I would have done that.
Yeah.
You know, it's a, Die with Zero was a very impactful book that I read this year.
Okay.
I read a lot.
All right. I'm actually going to write that one down. Die with Zero.
It's an easy read. You should read it. Yeah. Die with Zero is a great book.
So, you know, my business partner, Steve Rosenberg, I don't know if you know Steve, his son suddenly passed away last year. He got hit by a vehicle and passed away at 19. And Steve has all of these memories. His son been to 23 countries, been skydiving, rappelling, Grand Canyon stuff, motorcycle, all this stuff. And Steve and his wife, Renee, created a nonprofit called Live Like Jet. That's their son's name. And he literally talks about what you just said. Money's great, but if you don't use it to build memories, it's useless. Yes. Paraphrasing, but yeah, that's a... So I love that answer. Do you prefer dogs or cats?
Dogs.
Dog guy. All right. Mark, if somebody was compelled and wanted to reach out to you, what's a great way for them to reach out to you? For them to contact
MarkCreditor at gmail.com.
MarkCreditor at gmail.com, and that's creditor with a K.
Yes, and Mark with a K.
And Mark with a K. And if you are listening to this and you have not joined NARPM yet, why not call them at 800-782-3452. And you got to memorize or go to narpm.org. And if you are looking for remote team members, virtual assistants, please check out vpmsolutions.com. You can hire some folks. They can answer your phone. You don't need those four level phone trees like I did back in the day. Mark, thanks for being here. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
All right, everybody. I'll see you next time.
This has been a production of the National Association of Residential Property Managers, the recognized leader in property management, along with your host, Pete Neubig, CEO of VPM Solutions, where property management meets global talent. The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are that of the host and are not necessarily those of NARPM. If you have a hot topic you'd like discussed on the podcast, please email us at radio@narpm.org.